Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and today's podcast is going to be amazing. I have one of my good friends and mentors. He's an icon in aesthetics. This is Dr. Mark Tager. He's a physician, an author, a healthcare communicator, and he is an integrative aesthetics educator. I would say he literally has helped bring this term integrative aesthetics into prominence in the last couple years. His work focuses on personalized nutrition, nutraceuticals, skin health, regenerative medicine, and the gut vagal skin connection. So he's helping medical professionals improve speaking and on-camera presence. He's also CEO of ChangeWell, and he previously launched a little laser, the Fraxel laser. So he's helpful in the building and technology and the launch of Fraxel. He was an executive at Reliant Technologies for years, and currently he's co-founder, vice president, and co-chair of the Vagal Nerve Society. Now, this is an organization dedicated to advancing education about vagal nerve science, and it's something we don't know enough about, and I'm going to have so many good questions for you today about that. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Okay, Dr. K, it's a pleasure.
I am always thrilled to learn from you. We did an all-day conference in Vegas.
That was great.
At the Aesthetic Show, all about integrative aesthetics, and you've written a book. You've written two great books. So this one is Feed Your Skin.
Feed Your Skin Right. That's the right is the most important word.
Feed Your Skin Right. And that's going into its second edition launch. Yeah. And then this one, which I love, which I think everyone who's interested in doing an integrative aesthetics practice should get it as their Bible. Integrative aesthetics, your roadmap for success.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's impressive in and of itself. How on earth do you find time to write two books?
You know, there's something I love writing. This one's my 12th book, and I find that the actual act of writing for me is very centering. I get up early in the morning. There's no distractions, and you know
how early?
I get up around 4:30.
Oh my god!
So
that's crazy. I'm so jealous of you, 4 a.m.
But I go to bed early. So. But, you know, the interesting thing is if you were to really define meditation, so I define it as when you and the act that you are doing are one and time is flying, you're meditating. And for me, writing in the morning is a meditation.
It's interesting because you can perceive on your own when your brain is in that zone of clear thinking, and it's not all the time.
No, it's not.
But maybe you've trained yourself to be all the time on at that hour.
It just tends at that is what works with my biorhythms. That's when I'm at my most creative and my most focused. However, it's different for different people.
Interesting. Now, you talk a lot about describing beauty as an inside-out process, that you've got to have the inner workings functioning correctly to reflect outer health and beauty. Can you explain what internal factors are causing skin to age poorly like that?
You know, I think you know better than almost anyone that if you do the same procedure on two different patients and one gets an incredible result and the other one doesn't, and you say, well, wait, I did the same thing. And the answer and the difference, it lies in the health of their tissue. Mm-hmm. You know, we spend close to about $180 billion a year on topicals, things that we're smearing on our faces and our necks and our arms and other places. And when you think about it, right now, as you sit here, any place from 5 to 10% of your blood flow is going through your skin.
Wow.
So if you think about the delivery of nutrients, of antioxidants and vitamins and minerals and other important cofactors, that is the essence of beauty from within. So that's where the nutrition piece fits in.
And people just put so much crap in their bodies too, and they don't think twice about ingesting, you know, junk food and highly processed foods and chemicalized foods.
So the SAD diet, the standard American diet, is indeed very sad. And, you know, one of the issues, I mean, folks take in over 100 pounds of refined sugar every year. And it's hard to get people off of that. And one of the things that I found really can be helpful is just like hemoglobin A1C, in which the sugar molecules attach to the heme, in this case, sugar also attaches to collagen. and it glycates it. And when collagen glycates, that collagen becomes stiff and brittle, and then we get those lines that appear and the cross-hatching. So the same person who maybe wouldn't be as interested in dropping sugar for their hemoglobin A1C might possibly, and we all look for these motivations, be interested in the fact that that glycated collagen, the half-life for that is about 10 years. So when you glycate your collagen, it stays that way for a long period of time. So we really, and I advocate that one of the most important things that physicians can do, any kind of clinician, is to teach people to read food labels and look for the amount of hidden sugar that's in food. It's amazing
to
me.
That's a huge thing. I recently started wearing a glucose monitor, continuous glucose monitor, which you can buy over the counter nowadays. The Stelo is available to consumers. And it's fascinating because it teaches you the cost of food. Like, you quickly learn, like, I cannot have a Starbucks sugary drink. I don't need that. I cannot have a naked carb ever again. Because, like, I never knew that just eating crackers or, you know, pita chips was going to be so bad for me. So now I'm all about protein, all about really thinking, is that sugar worth it?
Yeah, the other thing that I think that's difficult is the concept of fiber. Because, you know, fiber is the food that the good bacteria eat in your gut to produce those short-chain fatty acids, which, by the way, go to the skin, and the neurotransmitters that work through the vagus nerve, the brain. And if you think about it, if you've ever tried to get about 30 grams of fiber every day, it's work. It's hard. But you are nourishing your gut and the your healthy microbiome and your skin when you do that. So I think that it's a conscious effort. I think it's a little harder. It's harder, in fact, than doing protein, than kind of calculating, okay, how much protein am I getting? Mm-hmm. How much fiber?
There's not like a good fiber calculator out there. I think you kind of just have to look at charts and figure out what does an apple have? What does a broccoli have? You know?
Exactly. I mean, I think a lot of it is about 4 to 5 grams per serving. So, you know, your oatmeal is 4 to 5 grams. You throw some walnuts in there, a handful of walnuts, that's 4 to 5 grams. Mm. Some chia seeds. So you can get a 10, 12 gram breakfast fairly easily, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's a good goal and motivation to have that. Because I think fiber and vegetables maybe even comes sometimes before protein. Because then you can get your legumes and your various beans and things that give you protein anyway while adding fiber, right?
And the other thing, you know, I've really gotten into gardening in my advanced years.
Me too.
I'm a gardener, and I love it. I've got a big garden. And I go out in the morning, and I look at all the different colored plants, and I think to myself, these plants are really smart. They're all these different colors because they are trying to protect the plant from the harmful rays of the sun. So that when you eat these plants, these richly pigmented plants, you're actually taking in the antioxidants, and they actually have a protective effect. It's not huge, it's not like sunblock, but it's maybe the equivalent of an SPF of 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. So you think that they're doing that for the plant, they could do it inside out for you.
Mm-hmm. So true. And then you get the benefit of forest bathing, which recently I was reading that plants and trees in the forest emit phytomolecules that you actually breathe in and give kind of a restorative resting effect. So if you wonder why you feel calm after going into nature, there's a reason.
Yeah, and there's also research showing that they have sounds. They put out sounds.
Yeah, so vibration.
If you think about, this is very California of us, Kate.
I like it.
But let's do vibes. You know, we're in California, SoCal. Let's talk about the vibes. And I think, you know, as science has begun to look at and investigate the elements of well-being, we have to really keep in our minds vibration. So we're sitting here right now, and you can measure the rays, the vibrations coming from our hearts with a sophisticated electromagnetometer 3 feet, 3 feet away. So right now, if we are within 6 feet,
We're bouncing off of each other.
We're bouncing off, But we also have the opportunity for resonance.
Yeah.
And resonance is that very special moment when you're in sync. Hmm. When, you know, we see it in the therapeutic relationship when you're making eye contact and you're right there with your patient. Hmm. So this is this concept of resonance, which takes us to heart rate variability and takes us to the vagus nerve.
Wait, do you think there are certain people that emit vibes that you perceive as your body does not align and they're anti-frequency with you? That must be, because sometimes you just see a person in a room and you just know that they're not your person.
Well, I have a whole nother system on that. Some years ago, I wrote a book called Transforming Stress into Power. And what we did was we looked at personality traits. We'd been teaching, my colleague and I, at Myers-Briggs for a long time. And we found that certain types of people were stressed in certain kind of ways. Now, the way I explain that is for anyone out there who has more than two kids, this is your test. Okay, here's your test. Let's assume they came off the same manufacturing production line. With which statement would you agree? Oh, my two kids are so much alike. What stresses one isn't what stresses the other. I have to deal with one differently than the other. You know, I kind of like this one. I love them both, but I like this one. We vibe better. Would you say that, or would you just say, wait a minute? Who are these two kids? They're night and day different. And I think there are unique aspects of personality, type, and temperament that those folks vibrate differently. Mm-hmm. They are relationship people, much more in tune to the feelings and needs of others. Logic people, very analytical and sequential. Creative people, ideas, possibilities. Mm. Grounding people, focus. So I think there's some overlays there. It comes back to there's some vibrations on top of a base of type and temperament and personality. Mm. And then your ability to manage the workings of your internal autonomic nervous system, the parasympathetic system. Peace, rest, relax, digest.
That falls right into what I want to talk about next, the vagus nerve. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So basically unheard of and thought to just regulate breathing and, you know, baseline functions of digestion, like you said, but honestly does so much more than that.
It touches every organ in the body. It is the largest organ nerve in the body.
Mm-hmm.
It is called the vagus because it wanders. So it goes
like a vagrant.
It goes out the brain stem. It goes into there's a little branch that goes to the ear, but the majority of it is found right there, right where you feel your pulse. It runs in a sheath with the carotid artery.
Exactly.
This is the important piece, is that 80% of this nerve is afferent. In other words, it is sensing information from your gut, from your heart, from your spleen, from your liver, and feeding that up to the brain. The brain then modulates those signals via the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this large feedback loop. So 80% up, 20% down. In the heart, it's responsible for slowing the heart, dilating the lungs for breathing. It is responsible for peristalsis, which is this nice, excellent movement of the gut that moves food through the body.
Mm.
It goes down in as far as the pelvic organs, but it touches every single part of the body. Now, what's interesting about the vagus nerve, most of our autonomic nervous system is not under our control. But we can control certain aspects of our parasympathetic system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the ability to slow down our heart rate, reduce some of the stress that's coming in our body. You know, I think that anybody in healthcare today will recognize that many of the patients who come see us are wired and tired.
Mm.
I mean, they're wired because of the frantic looking at their phone, all the inputs. They've got way too much stimulation. And they're tired because, let's face it, a lot of folks are not sleeping.
Right.
So they don't have the ability to tap into the rest, restore, digest component of the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm. How do we reset that for ourselves? Because yeah. I think you're right. We are wired and tired. And even if I want to rest on the weekend, it does take a while to let the cortisol wear off.
Yeah. So, I mean, 50 years ago, I wrote about deep breathing being first aid for stress.
And it's still there,
and it's
right?
still, it hasn't changed. I mean, the number one thing you can do is breathe.
The 4-7-4.
I like 4-7-8. There's also box breathing.
4-7-8.
4-7-8 is in for 4 through the nose, hold for a count of 7, and out the mouth for a count of 8. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think this is, by the way, a great thing for practitioners to do with patients. Dr. K, I was caught in traffic. I'm so sorry. I'm half an hour late for our appointment. The best thing you can do is say, I get it. Let's take a minute. Let's be here now. Let's center ourselves. We'll both have a better experience.
Mm-hmm. That's so funny because I do that with patients. I'll tell them, I need to do 3 big breaths with you to bring your blood pressure down, because that literally does and helps for less bruising, but also puts us in a calm mindset, to accept the beauty.
Yeah, and able to sort of relax and be there. So I think that's a piece of it. Now, there are devices. The 2 non-invasive methods involve either auricular, which is a small little branch of about 1,600 fibers in the ear, but the main one has to do with we call transcervical, and there's a device called Truvaga, T-R-U-V-A-G-A, and it's excellent. The protocol, very simply, is usually 2 two-minute stimulations.
And have you tried it?
Oh, I use it all the time.
Really?
Not just
that's why you're so calm and grounded.
well, I'm with you, I'm excited, but often, you know, it's a great device. It's wonderful for bedtime. A lot of folks, they either can't get to sleep, or what happens is they wake up at 3 in the morning, 2-3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So this is a great device. You do about 2 two-minute stimulations. Very simply, there's no pain associated with it. And studies have shown that it's really good for focus, concentration, and sleep. There's another. So the device that I'm most familiar with is Truvaga, and it's a non-invasive device. You just put it up to the neck. It works with a little app, and it's 2 two-minute stimulations. I tend to do it first thing in the morning to focus me again. My wife uses it at night to help her sleep. It's wonderful for that. There is another device that the same similar technology that is FDA cleared for migraines. Truvaga is a 14-year history of development with enormous amount of research behind it and multi-million dollars. So that's a simple thing. You can just get that online.
Do you need a prescription?
Nope.
It's like $200-$300.
Yeah, several hundred dollars, but it's well worth it.
There's a new device I was reading about that works on the auricular branch of the nerve that's like a cutaneous little in-the-ear stimulator. Have you heard about that?
The challenge about all the auricular ones is you have to have that on for 20, 30 minutes because it's just a tiny, small fiber that goes to the vagus. Where here you've got 160,000 fibers. You got, a small percentage of that in the ear. So this is the superhighway, and that's why the transcervical through the neck, through the skin of the neck, is, I think, the best.
So if you have a dysregulated vagus nerve and you're chronically wired, what kind of symptoms are you going to have? You're going to have poor digestion, poor nutrition.
Well, you will have
poor skin.
You will have poor digestion. You will also here's something I want you to hold on to, and this is really important. So, we know that curcumin and ginger and omega-3 fish oils, all down-regulate inflammation.
Yes.
Okay. How do they work? They work via stimulating the vagus nerve through something called the inflammatory reflex. So what happens, remember we talked about the fact that 80% of the vagus is afferent. It's picking up signals. So you've got inflammation, you've got these little molecules called cytokines, TNF-alpha, and things like that. And the vagus nerve is picking up on that and going to the brain. Now, at the same time, things like curcumin and ginger and to some extent boswellia and other herbs and fish oils, they work via that same thing. They help send the messages up to the brain, and they go back down from the brain to that body part, often the spleen, to down-regulate, calm down, say, chill, the mast cells that are responsible for perpetuating the inflammation. Mm. So this is the inflammatory reflex. And increasingly, what we are learning is that many of the modalities we use, many of the therapeutics work via this anti-inflammatory reflex, which is really powerful. Mm. And I'll tell you another little factoid for those of us who like little factoids. The gut produces 80%, 90% of the serotonin and the GABA and these brain neurotransmitters that are essential for mood, for mental acuity, etc. Those neurotransmitters that are produced by the good bacteria in the gut do not cross the blood-brain barrier. They just don't go via the blood vessels to the brain. They work by tickling, again, the vagus nerve to get this response, to get this anti-inflammatory response. So I think that and the neurotransmitter responses that we want. So I think that's another central feature of how this nerve is kind of wired into a lot of stuff.
So interesting. And the centenarians who live to be 100 years old, when they look at their guts, they all have like a high population of certain bacteria, maybe related to diet, but those happen to be bacteria that produce more of this.
We call those the commensal, the OGs, the really the good guys, like Akkermansia, for example. And what we really have that is such a shame is we have an epidemic of two things for the gut. One is leaky gut, which is the separation of the cells that line the gut. And by the way, we have 7 layers of skin cells. We only have 1 layer of cells lining our gut. And you think about that.
I saw that in your lecture the other day, and I was like, that stuck with
me. I mean,
one layer of cells, it's like, what kind of insane engineering project is that? Everything bad comes in through the mouth and then leaks right into the system.
Exactly. And, you know, when I was trained, we were taught that these cells are glued together.
Yeah.
And in reality, it wasn't.
Watertight.
Watertight. In the late 70s, the Japanese researchers found it. No, you can get a leaky gut. You can get increased penetration through these junctions. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that undigested protein fragments, the wrappings of gram-negative bacteria get into the system, and they travel. Mm-hmm. And they travel to the brain, they travel to the knees, they travel to the skin. And in some places, they're like a mimetic. In other words, let's say you get a little protein in the foreign protein in the bloodstream, goes to the knee, and it sort of looks like it could maybe fit into a cartilage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know this is a simplistic way to think about it. But what happens is it gets in there and it doesn't quite really fit. And so we have an inflammatory process taking place. So there's that. And then there's the dysbiosis. Mm-hmm. Dysbiosis is when you have a disproportionate percentage of bad bugs in your gut. Now, we all have the bad bugs. I mean, but if you've got a disproportionate, then they are crowding out the good bugs. They're putting out more of these potential lipopolysaccharides, these little toxins that can go into the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. They're crowding out the good guys that are making the neurotransmitters and the acetate, propionate, and butyrate, short-chain fatty acids, which are critical for health, for the organ health, and for skin.
So interesting, because if you change the gut biosis, you can change the whole organism. Like these incredible studies that show elderly rats, when given the gut flora of a young rat, will transform into a younger organism.
Well, there's the whole movement of fecal microbiome transplantation.
Yes.
I mean, is when you think about that and you go back to these studies where you take, again, the fecal matter and you transplant that and you get this incredible change. Now, what we do know, here's the good news here, because I don't think we're all going for fecal transplants anytime soon. Diet will change the microbiome.
Consistently. We're talking 3-4 months.
It changes actually in a short period of time, but you need to maintain it.
Yeah.
But you can actually get changes within weeks, three, four weeks. Mm-hmm. So the goal, of course, is the maintenance. So you can do that. And then, you know, I think if we get the sugar out,
mm-hmm.
you get the fiber up, you start leaning on the fermented foods, on the kimchis and the sauerkraut. I mean, sauerkraut doesn't go on a hot dog at my place. It goes on eggs in the morning, which is a great way to get that.
Oh, that sounds good.
I mean,
I'll have to try that.
I had that this morning with a little homemade potato salad my wife made.
Love it. Well, yeah, I think the idea that people have that they can take a probiotic pill and fix things does not work, because that just kind of flushes right through haven't built the forest for the bacteria to live in, right?
It's a piece. It's not just one thing. It is, you lean on the fermented foods, you increase the fiber. I'm a big believer in probiotics. I like the spore-based ones because they survive the harsh
GI tract.
Mm-hmm. There's a company called Microbiome Labs, and they have a product called Megaspore.
Mm.
The other thing that we're learning, and I think this is fascinating, is that we used to think, oh, it's a probiotic, I need millions of colonies,
billions
and zillions, and what we're seeing now is that there's an increased knowledge and awareness of specificity.
Mm-hmm.
So there are specific strains of particular bacteria that do certain things. So, for example, Microbiome Labs, I know they have a sleep product and a coping product, and they have these specific strains of bacteria that have been really well shown to calm things down or enhance a cognitive function.
Or create more happiness, oxytocin one.
Yeah. I just did produced for the Vagus Nerve Society, we did a series on women's health and the vagus nerve, and I had the opportunity to interview and produce a piece by Sue Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue Carter is the oxytocin expert in the world, period, end of discussion. One little thing stuck with me, and this is the tip, and I was always thinking to myself, why are we talking about people drinking more water, you're not getting enough water, you need water for your skin. It's essential for the oxytocin release.
Really? Water?
Yeah.
Because of the whole ADHD.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think to myself, okay, I'm going to drink more water now so I can be happier.
That's interesting.
Isn't that
interesting? This is not good because I don't drink enough water.
I'm
not like a person who chugs water.
You could be.
I could be happier.
You could be happier.
I have something to work on. Oh, my goodness. Well, I love the idea. There's that Lactobacilli reuteri that if you have that, it creates apparently more oxytocin,
more
happiness for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been taking that, so maybe that'll compensate for lack of water.
Yeah, drink the water, too.
Okay, I got to talk about peptides, because at your Integrative Aesthetics Day, peptides they're all the rage. There's so much demand to learn it. What are your thoughts on peptides right now? Like, we dove wholeheartedly into peptides for a while, and then I think that our thinking is changing.
I'm going to actually defer to you on this, and we did this panel together, and I thought that your take on peptides was so spot on. right now it is the wild, wild west. This is $500 million going to $1 billion industry. Mm-hmm. There is so much confusion there. An example, you go online and say, well, I only take research grade.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
I mean, just think about that. It says it is not for human consumption, really, these things. So that's scary. You don't know where it's come from. You don't know how it's been manufactured. You don't even know what's in it. So I think that we've got a land grab here in which you've got some good, legitimate, wonderful compounding pharmacies doing some good work, mm-hmm. and you've got everybody else trying to grab money mm-hmm. on this. As a practitioner, I mean, I would turn to you on this and for your take, because I thought your take was brilliant. My concern is that we don't know the consequences of these, and there may be consequences that we can't even imagine, or there can be consequences that, for example, you know, you've got a peptide that is increasing VEGF, which is which is a growth factor for vascularity, mm-hmm. and if you had a small tumor that is invading blood vessels, okay, and you're doing this peptide, you know, that worries me. Mm-hmm. That worries me. So I would turn to you. I'm going to stop here and say, Dr. K, I'll become the interviewer. Dr. K, you are an expert. You just gave some great talks at the Aesthetic Show on peptides. So what is your recommendation for practitioners and patients?
Well, you know what? I think I love the idea that we want to have optimization, human optimization of performance and strength, and like maintain our 30-year-old health, you know? Love that. But then, like you, I want a practitioner who's going to be so super thorough that they give me a whole screening before starting me on anything, because the enemy of good is better. I'm running good right now.
Yeah.
If I inject something and I don't know the ingredients and they're not vetted, they're full of heavy metals potentially it's water. Some of these products are sold and you find that there's no peptide in them. So I think all those things out, you have to check a full blood panel. You need biomarker testing. We need to know if you're full of inflammatory markers, if you have cancer markers, have you had a mammogram? Have you ever had a colonoscopy? Because like there's so many of our patients out there that haven't done the basic testing, but they want to go for the peptide.
Yeah.
And like, you might have a breast lump and I didn't check your breast, and here we're going to feed it some VEGF producing peptides, angiogenesis and BPC-157. Like, and looking at the studies that are out there, there's not a lot of human evidence, not much. I'm sticking to FDA approved peptides for the moment. And I might try things on myself one by one after I've really read about it. But I'm really going to do the homework for my patients, because I owe that to them, to do no harm first.
We really must stress great assessment.
Screening and assessment first. Metabolomics, like what's going on in this person's profiles, their genomics. Have you checked them for gene deficiency, gene errors?
I think this is, you know, I'm in the process as we speak of reworking a gene test for skin and hair health right now.
Nice.
And this to me is such an important area, because I'll just give you a personal example. Disclose a little bit. So my vitamin D level, left to its own devices, is 18.
Which is very, very low, less than half a normal.
Exactly. It should be 60. You know, 60, 70. So why is that? Because I have the genetic SNP, the single nucleotide polymorphism, a genetic variant that doesn't allow me to hydroxylate the vitamin D in my liver, which is the physiological process of tacking on a hydroxyl group, which is essential to make it active. So does my son. So does my daughter.
Wow.
So here's where personalization comes in. And I really have a problem with some doctors who say, oh, you don't need vitamins and supplements and such. You get everything from your food.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Please. You don't, because they haven't seen what people eat every day. But the other piece is, you know, I've just experimenting with myself. I have to take about 7,500 units of vitamin D a day. And you say, oh, my goodness, that's so much to stay at 60.
Really?
Yeah. So it's because I'm not hydroxylating it effectively.
So interesting.
So we can learn these kinds of things. We learn about, for the skin, the extent to which we break down our collagen. Are we faster or slower? Pigmentation, the tendency towards scarring with acne pigmentation, barrier, the essence of your skin barrier for water loss. So I think that's another piece of it. So all of those labs and genetic testing, and if you go one step further, you're into epigenetics, and which is much more malleable. And, you know, people ask me to explain epigenetics. And everything that you do, your thoughts, your childhood experiences, the food you eat, the air that you breathe, the stress that you carry, turns on or off genes. One of the studies that really moved me to consider the power of lifestyle, because, you know, here's what I can tell you. There's no way that as a practitioner, I can out-supplement a patient's crappy diet. He can't do it. And I was touched by a study that Dean Ornish did some years ago in San Francisco. He took men with prostate cancer, a Gleason 6, a certain kind of score. Half of the men had just watchful waiting. The other half had his protocol, which is meditation and exercise and eating well. And the results were staggering, that the men who had watchful waiting went on, many of them had needed their prostates taken out, whereas the lifestyle group did very, very well. So I just think that, you know, here's the other problem is we all know that the power of lifestyle, the power of exercise. I mean, you want to raise your nitric oxide to protect your endothelial health. There's really only one thing that really does it, and that's exercise. Nitric oxide, obviously, is a piece of that, but this is the amount of fat you take in, the number of calories. So the challenge, of course, is that practitioners don't get reimbursed for lifestyle. It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
I mean, which is, I think, the rush to peptides, in fact. Because peptides, there's science there. I'm not going to belittle the science. Everything is a pro and a con. Okay, but it's a lot easier to sell someone an injection or a pill than it is to help them go and improve their lifestyle, what they eat. Because these are deep, ingrained behaviors. They're tied to emotions and childhood upbringing, but when you see someone who embraces wellness and they start exercising when they haven't done it, they start eating well, they start doing a centering practice, meditation, yoga, you see this incredible transformation in them, and that's the most rewarding part of, I think, this lifestyle movement. Wellness, healthcare.
It's amazing. If you are a person who's listening, if there's a consumer out there listening, what are like three things that they should incorporate from the biohacking lifestyle and supplement world? And top three things, because make a list of 20.
I love this question because, you know, this book
right here.
This book had answered four questions that I've gotten from the beginning of time. What should I eat? What supplements should I take? What topical should I apply?
Right there.
And what procedures should I have? And everyone says, well, just give me the one. Give me three answers. And I have one answer for you. It depends.
Yeah.
And so we think a little bit about it. We go back to the assessment and the biomarkers and taking that great history, understanding the timeline of that individual, figuring out, you know, starting the negotiation, figuring out where, in fact, people are in their contemplation of change. Are they, I love Texas. I'm fixing on doing it. Well, does that mean you're doing it or you're not doing it? Are you committed to doing it?
I'm fixing on it.
I'm fixing to change. I'm fixing to change my diet. I'm fixing to start exercise. So I think there's a process. Now, it is unfortunate that the biggest wake-up call comes at a point of crisis, mm-hmm. at a point of injury, the heart attack, mm-hmm. the death of a loved one. When people sort of get shaken up and go back and reflect, and they now have a new openness to looking at their health and well-being. Now, I have to say something good about GLP-1s, because I was really not that keen on them initially. Mm-hmm. But as we see that people develop this locus of control, and they're beginning to see these changes in a rapid fashion, they actually start exercising more. And then they're being more active, and they're out and about, and many of them are changing their dietary patterns. So I think that success breeds success, and I do like the fact that for many folks who've struggled with mm-hmm. with weight and satiety, this is pretty helpful.
I think it gives them motivation to see a new version of themselves, that they didn't know was possible or fixable.
How do you look into the future and see that possibility? And and what does that look like for you? Can you create in your mind and your heart a vision of yourself being alive and vibrant and energetic and healthy and trim and fitting into your clothes? If you can put that into your mind, and I think the GLP-1s have actually helped do that, mm-hmm. because now people look in the mirror, they see that they've got a sense of control, they see a possibility that wasn't there before for them.
And the entire anti-inflammatory benefit,
lots of other
resetting
good stuff.
Of the mTOR and cell cycle, and so many other great benefits. So yeah, I think they've been game changing.
Yeah.
Has your definition of, let's just end with looking back in your career, does aging beautifully mean something different to you now than it has in the beginning of your career?
And this is really interesting. I'll share with you a personal story. I've been doing this for 50 years. I just put a little LinkedIn post of a picture of me when I started the Institute of Preventive Medicine in Portland, Oregon, and back in 1976. Hmm. And I saw patients for an hour at a time. Nice. And I taught Monday night yoga.
And you did?
Yeah, I did. Wow. That was great. So I started, you look decade by decade, and it's interesting because, as I go out into the world that we're in with these conferences, I see a lot of my buddies. Mm-hmm. And we're sort of all, there's a cohort of us mm-hmm. that are aging hopefully well. Mm-hmm. And we share these, sorts of things about how are you doing, how are we doing. So what would I recommend? I'm going to do a couple of things. And I rarely do this. I normally say it depends, but I'll give you three answers.
Okay.
One is, I think attention to understanding body composition is critical.
Okay.
It is not weight, it is body composition and muscle mass. Mm. So you can go right here in LA and get a DEXA scan for $75 or $100 and know not just your bone density for osteoporosis and osteopenia, but it will tell you your percent body fat, your muscles, and how much muscle you have. So muscle is the key metabolic fuel. It is also produces hormones. It produces myokines. Mm-hmm. These myokines go to your brain and make you HAPPY. Mm, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
So the first thing I think is really understanding body composition. I think the second is, we're faced with so many opportunities and choices of food. Every day, you got to be disciplined. Yeah. I mean, the healthiest people I know are the most disciplined. You just, no thanks, occasional drink, never eating to the point of being full. As you age, cut your food in half, share it with somebody else. I mean, you just don't need the caloric thing. And the third piece is, and this is interesting because in this book, in the last chapter, you meet my 15-year-old Malty Poo, who since passed. And
so sad.
And it's really sad. And it's a story of resonance, you know, with heart energy touching
yes,
and breathing.
Yes.
And so I, yeah, this is terribly personal, but so I went to my doctor, because I have a doctor. I have to have a doctor too. Everybody should
sure.
have a good one.
Yeah.
I said, I have a question for you. Can you keep me going for another 17 years at least? He said, yeah, we can do that. We can get you, you know, mm-hmm. to your mid-90s. And I said, okay, thanks. And I went out and bought a dog, a little puppy. I bought another little Maltipoo.
Recently?
Just now? 72 hours ago.
Oh, that's so exciting.
She's probably home right now chewing up
oh
all
God,
sorts of stuff
fun.
In the house. So, you know, the idea here for me is that there's a high touch, high resonance.
That made me tear up. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to stay alive. Yes, 95, I predict.
Okay.
Stay with that Maltipoo.
Thank you. Just to keep. So I think, you know, the sense of being loved and loving. Look, I have a wife of 40 years.
It's different.
I mean, 41 years.
Your dog is different.
My dog is different.
Yeah.
But, of course, I will share the secret of being married for 41 years. Yes, honey, you're right. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. That's part one. Part two is I travel about half the year, so I've only been home 20 years of it. So, but those I think, you know, look, if you look at what is psychological hardiness, what does it mean to be mentally resilient? Perceived sense of control, a willingness to reframe problems as challenges, a sense of commitment mm-hmm. so that you and what you are doing are one. There's no, I value one thing, I do a second thing, mm-hmm. that you don't have that. And the fourth one is connectedness. So the puppy, her name is Cayenne, because she's real peppery looking.
Mm.
She helps me with connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's got, I got the commitment stuff down. Challenges, you know, I've solved enough business mm-hmm. problems to know that it's just another problem. And for me, control is putting one foot in front of the other for exercise, moderating my diet, being in control of my breathing and my parasympathetic nervous system. I can turn it on at will.
Mm-hmm.
I can improve my heart rate variability, which is a measurement of vagus nerve tone. So those are the kinds of things I think about that model of the C's again, control, challenge, commitment, connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the inside game of longevity, I believe.
And aging beautifully.
Yeah.
Yes. Really, honestly, good advice from the heart. I hear you. And I think also having passion, because you are passionate about this teaching and writing in your industry.
I believe that. People ask me, a lot of my colleagues say, well, why do you do all this stuff? Why aren't you retired already?
Yeah.
And my response is, everything that I do enthuses me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, I ask people all the time, are you getting excited by what you're doing? Is there passion there? So I love to be in a room where people burn with passion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may not be the passion for the same thing that I burn for, but I think that's an essential part of human drive and behavior and healthy longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I intend to stay passionate about stuff at least 17 more years.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. Well, we're going to lecture on a lot more stages today.
You got it.
Yeah.
My pleasure, Kate. Thanks so much.
You guys, this has been so powerful, motivational, educational. It's all the things you need in a good podcast. Where can people find you, Mark, on all your handles?
You know, you can hit me at DRM Tager. That's the easiest place. My books are on Amazon. If you're professional, hit me up on LinkedIn. That's pretty good. I do a little TikTok stuff reluctantly. I mean, I can dance, but I don't dance.
I'm
going to
make you do a TikTok now. You know that, right?
Oh,
my gosh.
But that's the easiest way to get to me. And LinkedIn and Instagram, those are both good.
Amazing. Well, I always say surround yourself with people smarter than you and better than you who motivate you. Mark is one of those people.
Oh, thank you.
That's it for now, guys. I hope that you were motivated. Stay energized, get focused, disciplined, and I think that life is ours to seize. We're going to age beautifully.
Amen.
That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces, wellness, longevity, the whole picture, trying to be a role model for all you guys out there and finding great colleagues to bring you knowledge. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful. Mwah.